This is the Mouths of the South podcast.
You shut your mouth when you're talking to me.
The official Dirty South Soccer podcast.
Do you understand the words that are coming out of my mouth?
Talking all things Atlanta United FC.
Don't nobody understand the words that are coming out of your mouth, man.
We are
the Mouths of the South.
The South got something to say. That's all I got to say.
Oh, yeah, when there's a little Outkast playing in the background, you know what that means. It is time for the Mouths of the South podcast from Dirty South Soccer, the official SB Nation blog for Atlanta United. Sam Franco here alongside Eric Quintana and
what's up?
Ethan Smith.
Hi.
Good evening to you all, gentlemen. It's evening when we're recording this, so hence why I said evening. And, you know, it's been a great couple weeks for the world of soccer, I guess. It's always a great couple weeks for soccer. Obviously, you can have things go down with FIFA and all that stuff, and I'm sure we can explore that in a little bit. And with all the problems the U.S. Men's National Team's been having recently, so great might not have been the right word to use, but hey, I'm going to stick with it. I'm an optimist, and we will stick with that. First off, on today's show, or this edition of the Mouths of the South podcast, by the way, you can follow at Dirty South Sock, S-O-C, and that is our official Twitter account. You can check out DirtySouthSoccer.com for all the latest. And speaking of that, later on in the show, we have a big announcement for something that will be happening on Dirty South Soccer, so stick around for that. But first, we are going to start off today's, or this edition of the show, with kind of just going around the world of soccer and talking about what we've seen recently. And I want to start with this. Earlier today, in the city of Manchester, Sevilla and Man City were getting ready to square off in the Champions League. And let's just say that there was a little bit of a disturbance in Manchester. Fans of Sevilla were taking to the streets, and let's just say things got a little rowdy.
I mean, were they throwing it at each other, or were they just throwing them just to throw them? Because I've never seen patio furniture thrown like that.
I mean, people were throwing chairs, tables.
I saw barricades. A bicycle at one point.
Yes, a bicycle.
The bike is the best part of this entire video.
I mean, it's I don't know what you could equivalent it to, but it's just the equivalent of a wind up and just throw as hard as you can. You could, whoever this person was planning, picked up this bicycle and thought, yes, I've got a bike. This is going to top it all.
We should also say that, like, this is Sevilla and a Polish club, right? Am I right about that? I don't know the name of them.
Yeah, it looks like the, and I'm going to butcher this this pronunciation, but the other group involved in this soiree or fight, skirmish, whatever you want to call it, fans of Slask Rocklaw. I don't know exactly if that's the correct pronunciation, but we're going to go with that. A Polish club. Apparently, they have a long-standing beef with Sevilla, so that is definitely an interesting way to get your we talk about these like mile marches to stadiums that like MLS teams and like the U.S. soccer team like wants to have and all this stuff. That's an interesting way to get your mile march started.
There's a funny little line in a Deadspin. At any case, both sides seem disciplined of the same martial arts school where chairs are the predominant weapon.
Martial
that's
arts school.
Awesome.
That's from Vince McMahon, dude. You kidding me?
Oh, yeah, I know. Right. This is like Vince McMahon is looking at this going, there are too many props in this, guys. You got to chill out.
Right?
Actually, Vince McMahon's looking at it and he's saying, all right, I'm going to sign that guy, that guy.
Find the bike guy. Find the bike guy, Vince. Make this happen. Yes.
I guarantee you see that referenced at some point in the near future. At a soccer game is going to have a bike, or at a wrestling match. Somewhere we're going to see that again.
BlazerCon. Yeah. Hit it up. Men and Blazers, do this.
Yeah,
bike fight.
Dress up as a Polish soccer hoodlum and just carry a bike around with you. Like, why are you carrying your bike? Shouldn't you be riding it? Nah, man, this isn't a mode
of transportation. I'm about to throw this thing.
This is a weapon. So that was certainly interesting. Some more somewhat interesting developments from FIFA land, as our friends at the Men in Blazer like to call it. Sepp Blatter and Michel Platini have been suspended for the 90 days. That was something we already knew, but it just seems more and more like this whole election now, they're saying that it's going to go on February like it was planned, but it seems like that could be thrown into a little bit of turmoil just because Platini was largely favored to be the guy to take over for Sepp Blatter. And now you don't really know what's going to happen. I think there's a lot of very worthwhile candidates. When all this was going on initially, that last election that Sepp Blatter, you know, quote unquote, won, I was behind the candidacy of a Luis Figo. I kind of feel like a player that played at a a lot of big time clubs, a guy that, led his national team, the Portuguese national team, for years and years. I kind of feel like we need that kind of a perspective and not the perspective from the, business side or the bigwig side. So I would love for some more candidates to emerge. I know that Prince Ali has said he would run again, but I just think that it's time for a different perspective. And I think a player that really loves, cherishes, and has a great passion for the game could be that guy. That's why I was pretty behind the candidacy of Luis Figo. Unfortunately, he just didn't seem to gather enough steam behind him to push forward his candidacy. But I would like to see more and more people thrown into this, because I don't think that the people that are currently there, I think Prince Ali would be an okay candidate, but we just don't know a whole lot about him. I would like to see some more candidates put their hats in the ring.
I don't want
to
get all conspiracy theory, but because America is behind this, I got to think that they're trying to set themselves up to, you know, for an American to run FIFA.
Sunil Gulati for FIFA president.
Oh, gosh, no.
Maybe, but I don't know if he's – I mean, if they're going through all this trouble, they're going to find someone that you know, represents the ideals and – moral values of soccer and, you know, just right. All that nonsense. But I don't think they're gonna go through all this trouble and just put in someone who potentially could be, although not proven, just as corrupt.
This is a quick hitter, okay? Best FIFA president candidate out there right now. He's jobless, working a little bit on TV. Other than that, got nothing else to do but play golf. Steve Spurrier. Let's make this happen, guys.
Yes.
Head ball coach.
Well, it's funny.
Head of FIFA would be awesome.
It's funny you mentioned a college football coach, because I wanted to kind of compare this to what some people have said about the NCAA. You know, it's like if the NCAA is going to kind of run the way it's run and not give players their due and all this stuff, then a lot of people have thought that maybe some of the bigger schools and like the program should just break away from the NCAA and form their own thing. And I think the only way that we're going to get this true groundbreaking reform in FIFA is if the national team federations, or just the kind of like the FA in England, the US Soccer Federation, the Deutsche Fußballbund in Germany, these big entities are going to have to basically threaten FIFA and say, look, if you guys don't actually change this, we're just going to break off and, you know, form our own World Cup and not have to worry about the San Marinos and the Guadalupes of the world that have just as much power within the FIFA structure as they do.
Yeah, but if you do that, you got to think about the timeline of the World Cup and how, like, if they were to legitimately say, no, listen, we're done, all of us, and you had a list of just prominent nations, including the U.S. and, you know, some of the big, you know, like you said, Germany, you're missing a World Cup. Are you willing? Are you willing to go that far? Because there's no way they can get something structured in time.
I think
2018.
Enough credit. I think they really could. You know, a lot of people think that if the World Cup, like say tomorrow, the World Cup were going to be stripped from Russia, there's only a handful of countries in the world that would have the infrastructure to be ready to do it. But some of those countries are the bigger countries. Germany could be ready tomorrow. The USA, same thing. They could be ready tomorrow. I mean, I know that's a little bit of hyperbole, but basically they could be ready at the drop of a hat if they needed to be. England, I think another country as well, because some of these countries, keep in mind, have hosted recently, you know, Olympics and things like that. So like England, for example, especially in the city of London, their readiness to do something like that would be, you know, like I said, at the drop of a hat.
But it's not just that. Look at what all FIFA controls within, you know, just the Premier League, just in Europe, just transfer windows, just the scheduling, everything. That would all go away.
I mean, my thing on this is always that knowing that something's really, really complicated doesn't mean that it's not worth doing. You know,
like, I agree with you. I'm the first one to say, let's do it. I'm willing to give up a World Cup if it means real change.
I think that like what it would end up being is you probably wouldn't give up a World Cup, but you'd probably have one of the weirder soccer tournaments, you know, like which people would be in by that time? Where could you host it? And if it's all sort of like thrown together, that to me is really entertaining. Like part of that would be fun. And I think the broader outcome there would be good. But then the problem is, like, you know, we're talking about, you know, the big federations like seceding from FIFA and whatnot. The problem was that back in the day, like, you know, when the whole bladder controversy was really going down, the shining knight that was going to make this thing happen and really take us into a new era of a different, you know, seceded major league power five type thing was Michel Platini. And now Michel Platini is just as corrupt as Sepp Blatter. Now he's just his heart under the eight ball. So it's like, you know, I'm all for it. But to me, like, the honestly, if I'm telling you who I'm looking at, I want to find like South Carolina or Mexico, because like those dudes, as much as you would think that like there would be as much corruption there as there is everywhere else, like, look, like the Mexican Federation and like South America doesn't deal with stuff like this. They typically are like really, really solid as far as corruption goes. So like, I don't know, let somebody that is not like in the spotlight and also it doesn't have like a real history of corruption jump in this thing and make something happen. But until you can get those people on board, I'm a little bit more with you, Eric. It's like, it might be too big a change to try right now until you have the necessary cleanness in place.
Yeah, I always go back to the fact that if you were to say we're done with you, FIFA, you're looking at giving up a lot of soccer that is organized by FIFA and that will have to be reorganized, and that doesn't take a couple days. That takes months, if not years. And that I'd be willing to do it. Everyone has to understand that that's what it takes.
Yeah, unfortunately, we do live in a society that isn't very patient. So I think that sometimes your average soccer fan out there says, you know, I don't really care about all this FIFA stuff. Just somebody settle it and call me when the World Cup starts, which is unfortunate because I think you need a passionate fan base and fans that are willing to kind of push back against a corrupt entity such as FIFA. Like I said earlier, you know, I think that FIFA is an institution that obviously needs to look at itself very thoroughly, but unfortunately, that doesn't look like it's going to come from within, because I guess the guy that they've appointed as the temporary head of FIFA or whatever is one of the guys that was accused of taking bribes recently for these World Cup bids. So it's just ridiculous.
It never ends.
Exactly. I mean, we're not going to get anything.
We're not even talking to about the fact that Germany might have bought the World Cup with FIFA's full knowledge and aid in buying the World Cup.
Well, thank you for segueing to my next segment there, Jason. That's
like
called
synergy. Like a pro.
That's called synergy. I did want to mention that apparently Franz Beckenbauer might be implicated in this as well, and that stinks, man, because I really like Der Kaiser. But that's just one of those things where Germany apparently had some sort of slush fund, and it involved like the former CEO of Adidas, and basically they paid, it seems like, for the World Cup in 2006, which shouldn't come as a shock to anybody. But at the same time, I was at that World Cup. It was one of the most well-run events of that size I've ever seen. I mean, like I talked about earlier with Germany and their infrastructure, everything was just perfect, basically. I mean, from the stadiums to the transportation to the stadiums to the fan fests they had, where you guys remember in Rio down at the Copacabana Beach, you know, they had that huge screen and a lot of people would be watching the games with that screen outside. They had those at every city in Germany, and you could just go to these big public venues, and if you didn't have tickets to games or whatever, you can just go watch these games out in these big parks or whatever they did them in. In fact, one of them, I believe it was the one in Frankfurt, I'm not 100% sure, my memory escapes me a little bit, but one of the big giant screens was like on a floating barge in like the middle of the I think it was the Rhine River in Germany, and you could just stand kind of on the banks of the river and watch it. So it was pretty impressive. So Germany, again, is a country that ran a really great World Cup. It just seems, unfortunately, like they didn't really get it in the best of circumstances.
I'm just curious if there is a country that's had a World Cup in the past, I don't know, 10 World Cups that got it under the best of circumstances.
Where did it start? Who did it legitimately?
Like, did we do it in 94 legit? Like
that's
that
what I'm
last
wondering
one?
Too now.
Because my thing is, if that's the case, if it's the case that, like, we bought it in 94, like everybody else was buying it, my thing is that, like, yeah, you lost out to oil barons, but, like, how in the hell did y'all lose a World Cup where, like, you wanted a World Cup for two straight cycles and didn't buy it? You know, like, somebody needs to, you know, We got to make it rain, guys. It's not like we're strapped for cash or anything.
And you lost to a country who literally needs to build an entire city to host the World Cup. That'll never make sense to me.
You know, I'm looking. We'll try and get Bill Clinton on the pod. Maybe he can shed some light on things. But I don't know. I don't think we will know on something like that. It's unfortunate because you would like to think that the U.S., which was one of the more successful tournaments of the modern era in soccer, you would like to think it got acquired under the right means, but it's FIFA. We just don't know. I mean, there's just so much behind the scenes and all the, you know, we talk about a lot in around these parts just because it's college football heavy down here. But the bag man, you know, you always talk about the guy delivering the brown paper sack full of cash to someone. You know, it's unfortunate, but that's just what FIFA is. And we'll keep you posted here on Dirty South Soccer and the Mouths of the South podcast on any developments from FIFA. But quite frankly, it's like watching a snail crawl across the Sahara Desert, man. It's just a very slow and arduous process. So that's unfortunately where we are with FIFA. But it was good that we pulled up the U.S. World Cup there, because we will now turn our attentions to the United States and the USMNT, the United States Mutant Ninja Turtles.
That's such a happier subject.
Yeah, exactly. I know. We're really Debbie Downing it here to start the Mouths of the South podcast for this edition. But it's unfortunate what the U.S. is in right now. You know, the game against Mexico was obviously just heartbreaking the way that that game ended, although the strike from Aguilar to win the game for Mexico is one of the better just game-winning, like, sudden-death type strikes you'll ever see. Even though the U.S. crawled back twice, you know, they got equalizing goals, I just never even thought that they were going to win this game, even when they had tied it up late there when Yedlin puts through a terrific through ball to the Hawaiian wonder, Bobby Wood. And even then at 2-2, I still thought, I just don't see the U.S. winning this game. And you had, you know, the whole thing with Fabian Johnson where he had to come out because of injury, and Klinsmann said that he was like faking, or not faking, but he was kind of making a meal out of his injury. And Klinsmann was mad because he wanted to use Nick Raimondo for penalties. And I don't think you can save a sub like that. I hated that. But unfortunately, the U.S. loses to Mexico. The Confederations Cup, I don't think, is as big of a deal. It's nice to go there and play in that tournament and get a feel for Russia and get a feel for those stadiums. But outside of that, the only reason this game was really big is just because it was USA and Mexico in the Rose Bowl in front of 90,000-plus people.
It was also USA and Mexico, and it meant something. You know, like, there was actually something on the line versus just a friendly. And, you know, I'm with you in that if Fabian Johnson versus Jurgen Klinsmann is going to be a thing, that's a real problem. Because for my money, Fabian is still either the most solid with the most upside player we have in the squad right now, or at least as far as like somebody who's pushing the age of 28, he is clearly the best option we have near that age, except for maybe Michael Bradley.
But pound for pound, he's the best player U.S. has.
Yeah, I mean, I would agree. And so that can't become a thing. And then the idea also, just a real quick on like stuff that pisses us off about this game, which there'll be many things that we'll have to hit on with that. But things that make me angry about the game is I had not heard that Klinsmann was trying to save a sub for Nick Raimondo, which makes me incredibly angry because DeMarcus Beasley was basically wheelchairing his way down the left flank. And I'm like, DeMarcus Beasley is basically responsible for at least two of the goals.
He should have been the first guy out. He should be out at halftime. Like,
yeah, like, to me, the fact that you don't have a serviceable left back is the reason you lost that game, not because Fabian Johnson, like, faked an injury so that he could play in the Champions League this week. You know, like, so Fabian started over the weekend, and then he started today in the Champions League for Gladbach. And, like, look, I don't fault the guy. If you, like, are looking around going, okay, we got, like, two fullbacks that don't know how to defend anybody. We got a 30-year-old guy up top who can't score. We got another guy up top who, like, is supposed to be the best U.S. striker but can't find the back of the net. The only guy that's any good is Mike Bradley, and he basically has to just Olympico every time he takes a corner kick to score. Like, I don't blame you for being like, okay, I'm tired. I'm not going to score. I'm basically done with this. You know, like, it's not the best sportsmanship. It's not like the ideal narrative, but like, I don't blame a player like trying to make sure his career for the year doesn't get thrown off course in a game where the only prize is Confederations Cup. You know,
I think the only thing we can do is speculate, because we'll never know the truth from either side.
Yeah,
but
that's true.
If you have to side with, if I have to side with someone, just based off the recent history of, you know, Klinsmann's press conferences, I have to go with Fabian Johnson, just because
I think we all agree on that.
I can't trust Jurgen right now. I can't. Nothing he says is anything that I can take with any kind of confidence, because he'll say one thing, you know, in those press conferences, and the next day he'll have done something else. I can't explain how his mind works to anyone.
Do you guys remember when we played Brazil in a friendly recently, got shellacked before the game? Klinsmann was like, oh, this is Brazil. You don't experiment for Brazil.
Exactly.
And I don't remember the exact lineup, but the lineup was announced, and you're like, you don't experiment for Brazil. This
the
is
entire,
like,
it was an entire new team. You had Bedoya playing a defensive midfielder who he later after the game said, I've never played this position professionally in my entire career.
Unbelievable. And I think my biggest thing about Klinsmann right now is just his lack of certainty on – I think he said he knew what this lineup was going to be like weeks before the game. I still don't think he knows what his best lineup is. And quite frankly, I still don't think he knows what players to play in what positions. You know, Mix Diskerud is a guy who has been up and down, but at the same time, he's not a defensive midfielder, and Klinsmann keeps putting him in that position. I still don't think he knows where he wants Yedlin to be on the field. I think ideally Yedlin would be, you know, that kind of a winging or winger midfielder, but, you know, he plays some defense too. I just don't know if Klinsmann knows for sure where he wants all of these players to be. And I know I just invented a term, winging midfielder. I'm going to have to coin that.
But look, the real test for that will be what Sam Allardyce does with Yedlin at Sunderland. And if that's any indication, he's going to still be a right back. Because right now, Yedlin is a starting right back at Sunderland in their attempt to not get relegated.
Big Sam!
Yeah, like Big Sam's trying to save this kid's career at this point. Because, like, yeah, he put that awesome through ball to Bobby Wood, which is beautiful. And by the way, look, if I don't know what more Bobby Wood has to do to like instill
become the starting striker.
Yeah, it's like look,
he has unless, to change his name to Josie Altuve,
right?
I know, right? Like or Chris Wondolowski, better.
Oh God,
it's like if those kind of effort gut performances where he's literally the only guy I see running around the field trying to press and get the ball back in extra time. Like if that can't get you onto the field with a coach who stresses fitness so much, then we're back again to going, Jurgen's saying a thing that he values and then doing the exact opposite with that value.
I am so done with both Michael Bradley and Josie Altidore. Michael Bradley,
throw Clint Dempsey in there too, man. He had the worst game of his career against Mexico. He stood there the whole time, didn't run off the ball, didn't do anything. I'm with you on being done with Bradley and Altidore, but I'm also done with Clint Dempsey. Just bring in new blood.
But we know, we've seen what Dempsey can do. He hasn't been struggling as long as Josie and Michael Bradley have. He's gotten to the point where he just passes the ball. What's the most fundamental thing that you do at any level in soccer? Pass and move. He doesn't do the move. He just passes and hopes that it turns into something.
He turns the ball over at an alarming rate, and his touch is terrible.
We haven't had – I forget which – neither the Mexico game nor the – who do we play after that? I can't.
Costa Rica.
Did we have a single person on the U.S. men's national team go from the midfield and take the ball, you know, just dribble at defenders? Not one time. Everything was – trying to play it outside, and we just try to get a little fancy with it. No, I that's what I like about Bobby Wood. He's the one guy that I think could take it, turn it, and make a run at a defender. At least try. I we don't even see him trying to do that.
I'll say this about Jermaine Jones. You know, he's not always the most balanced player or on keel player. He tends to do a lot of things on his own a lot, not really play within the system. But at least, like you were just talking about, he's trying. He's making the effort. He's making runs. And it's, you know, they put him in that attacking midfield role, or at least more of a playmaking role, and Klinsmann finally let him do that. And despite the fact that, yeah, he can be a little rough around the edges, he's not the most polished player, at least he's giving you the effort, and he's trying to get forward and score goals.
But everyone knows that he's that Michael's only good in space.
Yeah.
Everyone's kind of figured it out that you just close down on him and you're done.
Yeah, I mean, my thing with Bradley is that this is again a problem of, because I'll defend Bradley. If those three players, Bradley's the one that needs to keep starting. You just need to put him in a role where he excels. And what has been the case is that Michael has been pushed way too far forward for what he does best. Like, if you honestly, and I hate that I'm going to say this as a Liverpool fan because it's like flashbacks, but the role that Michael Bradley needs to play is what they tried to get Steven Gerrard to do when he was getting too old to play like up in the attack. Michael needs to be the guy who's a holding mid, coming off the center backs, trying to play it out the back, and can shoot those incredibly good through balls down the field or bomb it down to a striker or something. Where Michael Bradley is not good is trying to be the guy who's going to dribble past people. And that, like, yeah, he can't do that. And we rightly deride the fact that we don't have anybody that's trying to do that. But it's like, at the same time, this is, again, going back a little bit to coaching. It's like, players have to execute when you give them a strategy, but at the same time, you've got to put players in that are good at those positions in the damn positions. You know, and it's like, if Michael is trying to play a number 10 all the time, it's not going to work. And I'm with y'all. We need to get younger immediately. So, like, you know, God forbid, maybe go look and find, like, some players in the MLS who just happen to be American who are younger and who play all the positions that you need more depth at.
Benny Failhaber.
Well, can I offer one more? Can I offer Darlington Nagbe?
Oh, yeah, dude.
Who, as of today, it's been – I saw it somewhere. I don't know where it was, but it basically says that his call-up is imminent. So
yeah, okay,
I have my fingers crossed, my legs – like, everything's crossed right now because I pray that he – I think – I'm not saying he's the answer, but I think he could make a big difference in how that team just generally looks on the field.
I actually know where that came from. So that's it was an interview with Caleb Porter on Extra Time Radio for MLS, because I happened to catch this in the car. And they asked him, has Klinsmann been in touch with you about Nagbe? And Porter was like, yeah, it takes like 6 weeks for the processing to go through for FIFA to where he's officially able to be called up. But he was basically like, you're going to email me this morning, and they're pretty ready to call him up for the November window. So
thank,
I think.
Thank God. I'm.
Yeah.
Rejoice, hallelujah, praise the Lord. That, yeah, all that stuff.
I just think you need to, yeah, exactly. Yeah, we need a thesaurus for all the words of joy from kids like that. But yeah, I mean, a guy like Failhaber too needs to get a call up, and I think it's just time to turn this team over to the youth. I think you have to look at some of these up and coming players that you have and really give them a chance. Again, I hate going back to the same guy, but I just feel like from what I've seen. And if you can put him in the right position, I think Mix Discrude is one of the more polished and really ready to take that step players that the United States has. And with getting back to Bradley just for 1 second, I agree with you that he's much better in a holding role, but that still doesn't negate the fact that he turns the ball over way too much in the middle of the field. That might be a little less if he does move back a little and play in a more defensive role. But also the touch. I mean, I don't know how you fix your touch, but man.
Well, here's the thing: if you're going to get on to him about touch, you got to get on to, you know.
Well, I'll get on everybody on this team about
Yedlin.
Touch.
Yedlin, I'll disagree with you and Yedlin in this point. Is I just don't think he belongs on the team. I don't think he's good enough. I don't think he has the basic skill to. He has moments, but we need more than moments. I need consistency. Which obviously no one on this team other than, I think, Fabian Johnson has been giving us. But you just don't know game in and game out what you're going to get out of DeAndre Yedlin.
Here's a question about the U.S. too, talking about moving forward with youth. We all love Tim Howard, obviously. He's one of the most beloved U.S. men's national team figures. But is it messing with Guzan's head that he's there? Is it time to just move on to Guzan and put Howard in the past? Because I don't think Tim Howard's going to be around for the World Cup unless, you know, he kind of finds the fountain of youth. And it's very possible that a keeper would do that. I mean, look at a Gianluigi Buffon still playing very up near the top of the keeping ranks in amongst world soccer. But is it time to just move on from Tim Howard and let Guzan focus on being the keeper? Or is it time to give Howard back the job?
I don't know. I mean, I feel like it's kind of like six of one, half a dozen of the other. You know, I mean – you now with Buffon and with Howard's obvious commitment to, like, he's playing really well at Everton. Like, he's not in bad form. And like, yeah, he gave away 3 goals to Man United, but those obviously weren't all his fault. I mean, you know, it's Man United playing an Everton defense that's pretty good, but not exceptional. To me, if you're going to, like, give up on, like, sort of let the Tim Howard victory tour begin and, like, the retirement tour start, to me, it's like, yeah, Brad Guzan might be the answer, but if we wanted to turn the team over to youth, like, I want to give a younger guy a shot too. Like, I'm looking at a William Yarborough or an Ethan Horvath going, you know, like, do you want to step up and prove yourself? Because, like, as much as I love Brad Guzan, Guzan has been prone to give away a couple of weird things that, you know, with Timmy and net, we're not really all that worried about. So I don't know. I mean, I just hope that Tim gets a better last game than DeMarcus Beasley has gotten now, with losing on a penalty shootout and then also getting just run by Mexico. So that's my main wish if we're going to start transitioning Timmy out of it, is to, you know, get him a good send off, as obviously very well deserved, as being probably the best American keeper I've ever seen.
I don't know if Guzan's the answer long term though, because the mistakes he makes, Tim Howard doesn't make. Like, and it's just dumb stuff. Like in the Gold Cup, for example, but just little things that I guess I want to say more experienced goalkeepers have a better handle on. He just doesn't.
No, and look, it's always going to be tough when you're coming in to replace a legend, and Tim Howard is a legend. I mean, he's the first American-born player to play for Manchester United. I mean, you know, that's not anything to shake a stick at, but I think if as long as Howard is playing at the top of his game or playing close to the top of his game, I think he's got to be the keeper. I just think that's the case. Brad Guzan's fine, but as you just said, Eric, he's not Tim Howard. And if Tim Howard is playing, you know, even 80 or 85% of his ability, I still think that's better than Brad Guzan. And that's a sad thing to say for Guzan, and who's a fine keeper. But Tim Howard is the best goalkeeper the U.S. has ever had. And he's, at his best, one of the or close to the top in the world.
Who's the young guy that they brought up, the U.S. men's national team? I forget his name. Amib?
Bill Hamid.
I want to see him. He is obviously going to be the future of the U.S. men's national team. So why not go ahead, especially against Costa Rica? Why not? Why wouldn't you have played him as opposed to Tim Howard? You know you haven't Tim Howard. Tim Howard is getting regular play. I don't know what Bill Hamid is doing.
Well, these are all questions for Jurgen Klinsmann, and unfortunately, it seems like he's, you know, according to some rumors and stuff, locked in a little bit of a power struggle himself at the top of U.S. soccer. So we'll keep you posted on that. We do want to move on, however, to the MLS, where the playoffs are getting close to getting fired up. If you look at things and how the standings look in the conferences individually, the East is much more wrapped up than the West. The only spot that's up for grabs is that last spot there, the sixth spot in the East.
I'm pulling for Orlando City.
Dude, who isn't, man? we'll talk about that.
People want to see Orlando City in their first season. Obviously, they'll be a big rival of Atlanta United when we start things up. But for now, you know, we can send them some good wishes. But right now, the New England Revolution would be in, but they have a 3-point advantage.
Isn't the goal differential something like 8? So, I mean, pretty much all but locked in.
Yeah, I mean, Orlando would have to go on some ridiculous run there. But, hey, I guess anything's possible. And then out west, the only teams that have locked up playoff spots so far are FC Dallas, the LA Galaxy, and Vancouver. Portland in fourth, Seattle in fifth, and Sporting Kansas City in sixth, although Seattle and Sporting Kansas City are on 48 points. The only thing that puts the Sounders ahead of Kansas City is goal differential, where they lead them by 2. The San Jose Earthquakes sit 1 point behind those two teams at 47. So things kind of starting to shape up a little bit, and we'll see where the dominoes all fall. I'll pose this question to you guys, Eric. I'll let you take a crack at it first. Right now, who do you think is playing the best? And I know we look at some of the lower payrolls in the league. And what do you know, two of the bottom three in payroll, New York Red Bulls and FC Dallas, are leading their respective conferences. So who do you like going into the playoffs, Eric?
I think the general consensus is New York, the Red Bull, and the LA Galaxy, although LA Galaxy just got their throats bashed in by Portland. But I can't say I've watched them enough, but from the highlights I've seen, the way they move the ball and just play off of each other, they do it so well. And they do it better than anyone else in the league right now. And other than them, I really want to see Portland play. And I want to see what LA Galaxy can do, you know, as the team with all the DPs and all the, you know, the names and all that stuff. I want to see how well they do going up against, in a playoff atmosphere.
Jason, who do you like?
I like Toronto, which is crazy because you have, to me, the thing that's so interesting about Toronto is obviously Seba Giovinco is like a kid in a playground with the MLS. Like it's just ridiculous how easily the guy can dribble around people, can manufacture goals out of nothing. What's interesting is that Americans are used to those kind of teams. Like the team with the star is going to be the team that lasts a long time in the postseason. I don't necessarily know if the MLS is like that. It hasn't necessarily been that way in the past. But this year, like season 20 has been exceptional in that you've had some of the most significant DPs as far as their contributions to the team they're on. in Giovinco, in like Giovanni Dos Santos, in all, you know, all these guys that are just tearing it up. And Didier Drogba, that was the other one I was going to try to say. So I'll be interested to watch Toronto, and especially like we've been trashing them on the podcast, but like if Michael Bradley and Josie Altidore return to any kind of form, and you've got Giovinco at the 10, Mikey alongside him for the link up play, and then Josie up top to try to finish some stuff off, like that could be a really tough out for anybody. And then like over in, LA can always do it. And Eric, I'm with you. The idea of Portland finally finding their feet right now, just before the playoffs, is awesome. Like, I'm so excited. But the other team that I wanted to watch over in the East is Dallas. I love how Dallas plays. Like, I love, they are full throttle. They go really fast on the counter. They're one of those teams that's like sneaky good. You don't really know a whole lot about them. You don't really know a ton of people on the team, but at the same time, like, they are one of those teams that will just tear you apart if you let them. And so I'm rooting for them because they're one of those smaller clubs that doesn't have a ton of like elite history. I mean, hell, at this point in the MLS, anybody other than LA doesn't really have a lot of elite history. So I'm very much rooting for like the teams with the stars in Toronto and then the nobody teams that are just exceptional this year. And that to me is Dallas and Columbus.
Oh, go ahead.
I was going to say, I'm also going to be watching just personally, New England Revolution, Portland with, Nagby. I'm going to watch Toronto with, obviously Josie and Michael Bradley. I'm going to watch LA for Legit and maybe Robbie Rogers to hopefully, hoping that these guys get called up and we see if their game translates. Obviously, it's two games. I think the way the schedule works in the playoffs from the MLS is that they'll have the first two rounds before that the first World Cup qualifier for the U.S. men's national team. And I'm hoping that we can see if their game, assuming they get called up, their game in the playoffs in those two games translates to playing with the U.S. men's national team, at that level.
Yeah, looking at the MLS, it's not a league that I'm really super following yet, obviously, is Atlanta's not in there. Obviously, we like to keep tabs on things. I will say that, I really like Toronto in the East, the way they're playing right now. I think Giovinco will ratchet things up when the playoff time comes. And I'm going to go with a little bit of a wild card out West. I really like Portland. Like you guys were talking about, Nagby's playing very good and are very well. And Diego Valeri has been one of my favorite MLS players for the last couple of years.
He's one of those guys I wish was American.
I know, man. If we could naturalize Valeri, I mean, he just plays with so much flair, for an Argentinian player. And I just think that, he's a guy. He's actually going to be suspended for their game coming up this weekend against Colorado. But I think, him and Nagby, and I really like Portland, and I want them to make a charge because that fan base is diehard. The Rose City.
I'm all about the atmosphere. So if they can get a home game, if Toronto can get a home game, I'm trying to think the else.
Well, I'd love to say the same thing about Seattle, but they're terrible.
Oh, I know.
Like
you
can't.
Awful. They're so bad that you don't want to. You can't root for them.
Yeah, really. I really don't want them to
because they're so bad. They're playing so technically unsound that you're just like, no, that's not how it's played. You guys, no, stop it.
Well, it's funny, the way Clint Dempsey looked against Mexico is the way that he always looks when he's wearing that neon green for Seattle. He's just terrible. So, I don't think we can get behind Seattle. Sorry, guys. That's just one that that's going to have to work itself out. If they're going to continue to play the way they're playing, they're not going to get very far.
So. There's also a scenario where they can fall out of the playoffs, which would be hilarious.
That would actually be pretty fun.
Although there is literally no one behind them that I want to see in. I want to see Sporting make it because, like we said, that's a great atmosphere when they're amped up. And Benny Failhopper would be pretty fun to watch. But San Jose and Houston are right behind them, and I would love to not see Wondolowski and Brad Davis in the playoffs because that's a snooze fest.
Yes, it is. All right, before we sign off on this edition.
We have big news. We have big news.
Yes.
Big news.
Yes, big news. October 22nd. Dirty South Soccer's very own Aaron Bauer will be interviewing Carlos Bocanegra.
Or Boca Juniors.
Yes,
Boca Juniors.
Boca Juniors, as we like to call him on this show, or at least as I like to call him on this show. Freudian slip.
It's your one blunder.
Darren River Plate.
Actually, if that's my one blunder, then I'll take that any day of the week compared to some of the stuff I've said on here. I kid. But yes, we will have Carlos Bocanegra of Atlanta United coming on to do an interview. Not on our podcast. We'll work that out later. That'll be coming. But it'll be
on Dirty South Soccer for sure.
Yes, it'll be a print interview with Carlos Bocanegra, and that will be on DirtySouthSoccer.com. So that's our big announcement. Obviously, we will have more and more leading up into Atlanta United's debut and stuff. But you know, for now, we like what we're doing. Do a podcast every couple weeks, and if anything big pops up, we'll jump on that too. So thank you guys for listening to this edition of the Mouths of the South podcast. And I would just like to end by saying, Jorginho Wijnaldum for Atlanta United's first DP. Can we all agree on that? Is that a good signing there?
Yeah, that was ridiculous.
4 goals for Newcastle United this past
ridiculous
weekend. All right, for Eric Quintana and Jason Smith.
Go get a burrito.
I'm Sam Franco. And yes, Jason, go get your burrito. You were talking about that before. So enjoy you guys this next couple weeks, and we will talk soon. Thank you for listening to the Mouths of the South podcast for Dirty South Soccer.
See ya. Boop, boop.